Porto world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Tet Zion, and we're still holding on daf Kuf Tet Vav Amud Beit, because I'd like to make sure that we go over these very important limudim about the rules of how to deal with Tzad HaShoves in general. Some fascinating new rules that came up. So basically, let's remember what happened over here. We made a three-way limud in order to figure out how we know that there would be an iser of achila or achila and hanah in the dinim of basar b'cholav. So we started with a limud directly from Treifa. And that was the idea of Anshei Kodesh Tiyunli. And then we said it's at least the same lashon that appears over here means that it's Osir Bachila. But how do we know that it's Osir Bahana? So then we went to Orla. We brought a raya from Orla. And we said if Orla, no Avera was done and it's Osir Bahana, so Koshikane, here, if an Avera was done, then for sure it would be a Isser Hana'ah. Then the Gemara said, no, but it's different because look, Basar B'cholav starts off as two completely kosher items. Orla was always Usser, never had a Sha'at HaKosher, and therefore maybe the Orla is more Chomer. So we ended up then bringing a Raya from Chametz B'Pesach. Chametz B'Pesach had a Sha'at HaKosher, and it was Usser L'Hana'ah. But we said, but what about Chametz B'Pesach? That's a Chiyuv Kores. Now, you would have expected that at that point we would go back to Orla and we would say, yes, but Orla is not a Chiyuv Kores, and therefore put it all together and we get a Tzad HaShoveh, right? But we didn't do that. Instead, for some reason, what we did is we went to bring in a third issue, and the third issue was Kuloi HaKeren. I should say really a fourth if we include our original limud from Treifa. So we had the initial limud from Treifa, then we went to the dinim of Orla in order to establish that it was Asur Bahana, and then we went to Chometz B'Pesach in order to establish that Shas HaKosher is not critical, and then instead of going back, we asked on Chometz B'Pesach the Vananish Koras, instead of going back to Orla, we brought in Kloy HaKerem. Kloy HaKerem is Asur Bahana, and it's not an Onesh Koras. Okay, so now, the question that the Gemara wanted to know is, why couldn't we start directly with the Kavachomer from Orla and just say that we learned it out from Orla? So there we said that these are all necessary because we need to learn the difference in what stage of a limud we can ask a question or what kind of question we're allowed to ask. So the Gemara said the reason that we didn't go directly to Orla and just make that simple Kavachomer, if there was no Avera done, and nonetheless, this is a Ramah. So why can't we say the same thing would be true over here? So we said, because you could always go and prove it from the outside, that that's not necessarily the case. Averas can be done, like in Koresh with your Shor Nechamor, or Averas could be done like you do a Disha, even though you muzzle up the Shor that's doing the Disha. But nonetheless, there was no Isser that was involved in the Totsa'ot of that thing. And therefore, we wanted to start off with our Treifas. Then we knew that there was an Isser Achila, and we're only going to Orla in order to prove the Isser Hana. Now, the critical issue was, why did we need to go back? Why didn't we go back, I should say, to prove from Orla that the Isser Kores is not important as it is by Chometz Pesach, because after all, there is no Isser Kores by Orla. And that would have been a classic Maha Hatzad HaShoveh Sheb'neihem, right? Instead of that, we went to yet a fourth issue, which Kaloi HaKerem. We could have just said, Orla is a proof that it's not important that there be an Isser Kores, and then we would have made Hatzad HaShoveh. So we would have said, yes, but Orla never had a Shas HaKosher, and these things did have a Shas HaKosher, so then we'd bring a Raya from Chometz Pesach. Chometz Pesach is an Isser Kores, so then we'd bring a Raya from Orla, and we'd say that Tzad HaShoveh Sheb'neihem is, again, that we should have an Isser of this mixture, right? So that got us into the rules of the dinim of limudim, particularly tzad hashavas. So the original suggestion was we wouldn't have been able to just go back and make a matzad because we would have been able to prove from nevela that nevela is only an iser achila and it's a heter hana, and it should be exactly the same as Basar v'chalav, because no avera was done. We can learn it out from Orla, and we can learn it out from Chametz Pesach and Hadashah Kosher, and so on and so forth. So we should be able to prove from nevela that that was not a good limud, which is why we needed to bring in a third issue. Why the third issue would help is not clear, but we'll see as we go along. Now, our first important lesson from that day was the din that Reish Lakish had taught, which is when you're making a tzad hashava, you cannot bring a proof from another outside situation that should have been the same and yet wasn't. So therefore, the question from nevela is an outside proof. You need to prove something is wrong with the common denominator. Only and if you can show that there's another common denominator, then you can talk about a problem with the Gezeirah Shavah. So that can't be the reason that we needed to bring in Kaloya Kerem, because there was nothing wrong with the common denominator. Nevela is not going to be a useful question. That's a very important rule, and it's so important that Gavi probably took out his magic pen and had it written down, that you cannot ask from a question bi'alma. It's only mi'gufa that you can ask. Okay. So then, what is the reason? Well, we said the reason is because you could have found another common denominator. Okay. What was the common denominator that you could have found that is now helpfully addressed by the fact that I bring in Kiloya Kerem? Well, I could have said they're all grown from the ground. Grown from the ground? Who cares? You might as well say they're all colored red. I mean, it's totally irrelevant to the question of whether you can learn out from something. Ah, that's true. But you can ask, and this is called koldehu. So the idea over here is you can say something that is not necessarily a reason for it to be different, but since you're looking for a common denominator, who knows? Common denominators, and this is true in any experimental situation. If you can find a common denominator, even though you have no idea why that particular issue would be relevant to your results, right? So let's say you've got this information about smoking, and you've got a group in which you've tested the amount of lung cancer that comes from smoking, and then somebody points out, but wait a minute, all of the people that you're looking at were also people that drink alcohol. Maybe drinking alcohol has something to do with lung cancer, and it's not the cigarette. And well, you say, but I mean, the cigarette smoke goes into the lungs. I mean, what are we talking about? The drinking has nothing to do with it. Oh, no. The cigarette companies will have you strung up and quartered if you try to argue something like that, right? So the same thing is true over here. If you can bring a common denominator, even though it appears to be totally irrelevant, and that's called koldehu, any common denominator in a data set is a disaster. So therefore, we say if we're looking for common denominators, then you can ask koldehu. But then the Gemara asks, well, so wait a minute, then what good is it to go to Kloya Kerem? I mean, Kaloya Kerem is also grown from the ground. So all you've done is found yet another piece in your data set that has that same problem of the common denominator. So how did we help this? And the Gemara came out yesterday that in the event that you've got three data points, then, and this is not because it's logical, it's because this was one of the rules that was the Kabbalah, Rashi says, for Moshe Mi-Sinai. This is the way that we understand the dinim that were given over about how to use a mahatzad, is that if, and here was our rule, and this is now, we are starting today's daf on daf Kuf Tet Zayin, right on the top, and we will learn that rule. Let me just make the other recording here. So we start on Kuf Tet Zayin, first word. The rule is, as long as you're talking about chada mi-chada, you're learning one item from another item, right? Let's say you just want to learn Aposer v'cholav directly from Orla. Then your question has to be, no, this case is different because it's more kal, or this case is different because it's more chomor, depending on what you're trying to learn out. You can't just say, well, maybe it's different because this one is colored with polka dots and this one isn't. That's ridiculous. So if it's a direct limut, it has to be a rational difference. Kula or chumra parchinan. But you can't just ask stam any kind of question. Kodulo parchinan. Now, if you're making a ma'atzad and you're learning one thing from a common denominator of tarte, oh, then you're able to ask even koldu. Well, maybe the fact that it all grows from the ground is somehow relevant. I don't know. So there are filu koldu parchina. But once you have 3 points in your data set, here's the rule. If it's a common denominator, which means that you needed to go back and argue yet once again. So let's say, for instance, suppose when we brought the proof from the Koloi HaKeren, we would have said, yes, but you can't bring a raya from Koloi HaKeren because of X. And then we would have to say, well, X is not important because it didn't show up in the other two. Then you're stuck with a common denominator data set. And then you can still ask Koldehu. So, if you go back with a question and you need to access the common denominator, so then, of course, once you're looking for common denominators, you have to take into consideration even ridiculous common denominators because you don't have enough information to know whether it's relevant or not. This is literally Nogea every single day in the type of experimental data that the FDA is going to be asking for and so on. It's a very simple, straightforward way to understand the statistical base. So therefore, if you're stuck with a common denominator, you'll be able to ask Calder. But if you didn't need to go back and ask anything, so you didn't say, well, Koloi HaKeren doesn't prove anything unless we also have access to something in Chametz B'Pesach, but we didn't do that here. We just brought in Koloi HaKeren as a third piece of data. So Elo, then you have to ask something that has a rationale. So it would be a Kula, V'Chumra, then Parchinan. But you can't ask just from the fact that there's some irrelevant common denominator because we weren't relying on the common denominator. Brilliant. Now, the question is, why did we not have to go back? Could we not have attacked the Koloi HaKeren argument and say, no, Koloi HaKeren doesn't prove anything because Koloi HaKeren never had any Sha'at HaKosher. The Koloi HaKeren grew up in the vineyard and it was usher. But I'm trying to prove a case in which you've got something that used to be completely kosher. Basar was kosher, cholav was kosher. Now you're putting it together. So how do you know you can read it from Koloi HaKeren? And then we would have to say, well, there is always Orla. And Orla didn't have a shas kosher. If it grew Orla, obviously lechatchila. So therefore, we should have asked that question. If we had asked that question, we wouldn't have been able to prove that there is an Isra Anoa by Basar B'Cholav, because we would have been able to say the common denominator of all things that we have found that are Asr B'Hana'ah is that they are all alcohol drinkers, or in this case, they all grow from the ground. I don't know, but whatever, that may be very important. Omer Ravada Bar Ava, you know why? This proves something amazing. It proves that actually Koloi HaKeren did have a Shas HaKosher. How do you like that? Well, how is that? The question would be, if you create Koloi HaKeren Do the original growths that started growing in that vineyard before there was any kilayim in that vineyard, do they now suddenly become prohibited and that which was kosher becomes prohibited? That's what you see from here. Because since we were not able to go back and ask, well, Kilei HaKerem never had a shat HaKosher because whatever grew as Kilei HaKerem was aser and whatever didn't grow as Kilei HaKerem was mutter. From here, you see that's not so. That the original growths and roots in the vineyard, once you brought in the kilayim into the vineyard, which were originally kosher, must become aser after the kilayim is introduced. And therefore, it did have a shat HaKosher, and therefore we can't go back and ask, well, you need to look at Chametz BePesach again and create a common denominator, because I don't have to create a common denominator, because Kilei HaKerem itself is actually a perfect example of an Iser Hanah where there was no Shas HaKosher. Perfect. So therefore, Amar Rava, Barava, from here we see the very fact that we did not have to go back and ask that question, and we were not reduced to needing a tzad hashaveh, that proves zot omeret klai hakerem ikaron ne'esar, which means that they did have a shat hakosher before they were planted together, and now it's aser, and therefore we have all the data needed just from bringing in Kilei HaKerem, and we don't need to go back again and ask and need to prove it from Chametz BePesach. Okay, now we're going to pop down into the question of, is that really true? Do Kilei HaKerem become retroactively Aser, whatever was growing before, the minute that you introduce Kilayim into that Kerem, the whole thing becomes Aser. Is that so? Because that's what we are asserting here. Is that so? So Mosiv Rav Shmaya Bar Ze'ira, it does not seem to be so, based on the following Mishnah in Kilayim. Listen to this Mishnah. A guy owns a kerem, and he has a planter, a pot that has holes in the bottom. And he decides he wants to move it through his vineyard into a field on the other side of the vineyard. And in that pot, there is actually the type of species that are Kilei HaKerem if brought into a vineyard. Well, since the pot has holes in it, and you will recall that a pot with holes, even if it's not touching the ground, is considered to now be attached to the ground, and nutrients passing back and forth through the airspace and the moisture in the air, it's considered to draw from the ground. So here's the deal. Since Kilei HaKerem is measured by one part in 200s, because if you have kilayim and you have 200 times as much of heter, you can be mevatel the kilayim. This is a drabbanan, but nonetheless. So if you can be mevatel the kilayim at 200 parts to one, so then it's batel. The same thing is true in terms of the new growth. If there's a new growth that is more than one part in 200, then it's aser. So look at this. You bring in your atzmo tzmokuv in the kerem. If the increase in the period of time that you left that pot in the kerem on its way through, if it was one part in 200, then it's aser. But if it's less than that, then it's mutter. Now, what does that show you? That shows you that only the part that increased is aser. Well, why is that? You claim that the moment that you introduce Kilayim into a Kerem, the whole darn thing is Aser. And now we see that that's not true. So then we should have gone back and asked, how can you bring a Raya from Kilei HaKerem? It never had a Shat HaKosher. Boy, this is a serious issue. Because we see Hosifin Lo Hosif Lo, only if there was that additional more than one part in 200. Omar Abai, this points to an extremely fundamental insight into the nature of Kevayakarim. And says Abaye, this insight is understandable through an analysis of the Pasuk, if you're careful. We have two different psukim that refer to Kilayim. It says in one Pasuk, Pen tikdash hamale'ah, you have to be careful that the growth, the mele'ah, should not be kodesh. So what's the Pasuk? Lo tizra karmecha kilayim, pen tikdash hamale'ah, we're afraid that what will happen is that the new growth, that's the mele'ah, right? That's the new growth. Hamale'ah is going to end up being tikdash. Tikdash means pentukat esh, as we said. And therefore, this pasuk is very clearly saying that only the new growth will be aser. Pentikdash hamale'ah. But then the very next word says, pentikdash hamale'ah hazera asher tizra. Now, what does that mean? That means the original seeds that had been sown would now become aser. Well, which one is it? Is it hamale'ah or is it hazera? So the pasuk itself is presenting an impossible contradiction. How do you possibly resolve that? Hakeitzad? Aha, says Abaye, that's the whole point. There are two separate dinim in Kiloyakera. If it was Zarua mi'ikaro, so when you plant it in the state of Kilayim, then that initial zera, so let's say you bring in now a sapling, the whole thing will become usher, because then it will be bahashrasha, because it says the zera. The zera means once it begins to take root. Masha inkin, if something was planted before, and now you're bringing something in, then it's hamle'ah, which means only if there was enough of new growth that would be able to answer it because of the mixture. And then hosif in, lo hosif lo. A beautiful, beautiful insight that came about in the dinim of our pop-down issue right now, Kiloyakarim. Now we're going to pop right back up again and go back to Basar B'Cholo. But meanwhile, we've learned some beautiful new issues in how to understand the nature of a Mahatzad, and it's just wonderful to see it. If you're limited to the common denominator, then you're limited to the common denominator, even if you have elements that don't seem to be related, too bad. But if you're not limited to the common denominator and you're making a rational assessment of things and you're running a computer simulation in your brain, then the simulation can be relied on. Now, getting back to our basic issue over here, which you might have forgotten, it was something called Basar B'Cholo, remember that? So the Basar B'Cholo issue comes back up again. I won't trouble you with more not bar not data, but since Mo Willy loves to know wherever we get into not bar not, there's a lot of discussion here on not bar not because Rashi raises the problem. But we're going to keep things simple. So our Mishnah that says that Basar B'Cholov is Osir Bahana'ah is the Loki Aitana. It's not like Shimon ben Yehuda Imra Mishum Rabbi Shimon that Basar B'Cholov is not Osir Bahana'ah. Whoa. Basar B'Cholov is only Asur Ba'achila, and it is Mutar Ba'ana'ah. And I'll prove it to you. I'll prove it to you from the same way that you already proved to me that it was Asur Ba'achila. Remember that we were talking about a trefa, and we found the same language. By Basar B'Cholov, it says, Ki am kadosh ata l'Hashem Elokech, lo tevasher gedi b'chalei v'imo. And by trefa, what does it say? So just like the meaning of the Am Kadosh means, or Anshe Kodesh means, Osur Ba'achila Umutar Ba'ana'ah, says Rabbi Shimon, Avkana Sur Ba'achila Umutar Ba'ana'ah. Okay, interesting. We always thought that our Mishnah was Divrei Kulam. Now it turns out Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai disagrees with our basic assumption. Now let's read the next piece of the Mishnah, but just to review that, and as Rashi points out, look, I mean, what we do, we end up using Lotavashu Gediba Chalevimo, the three-time limit of Rabbi Yishmael, as our most basic quoted all over Shas, and apparently that was the derech of the sugya. That's how we know that there's an Isser Bishel, Isser Achila, and an Isser Hanoah. But just to remind you, there were a lot of other things that we had learned out over here, that it wasn't just a question of the machlokis of Rav Shimon bar Yochai and Rav Yishmael. We basically had our Isi ben Yehuda, which was the most complex limud that combined trefa, orla, chometz, and kilayim. And all four together led us to conclude that basar b'chalav is asur, both b'achila and b'hana'a. Okay. Then before that, we also had the Tana d'vei Reb Eliezer, who basically learns that the lo tochal kol to'eva means that anything that is asur b'achila is by definition asur. Oh, no, sorry. Reb Eliezer actually said no, that since it says in conjunction with selling a nevela, sorry, I skipped one, selling a nevela, so it says, make sure that you don't, that's how he reads the pasuk. If you're going to sell it, then lo tzivashir gedi b'chalev imo. So if you want to sell it, that means you want to get anah from it. If you want to get anah from it, you better not cook it in milk, because then you won't be able to sell it to the goy, which was fascinating. We had Reish Lakish, and Reish Lakish amazingly learned it out from a Karban Pesach, because that's the only other place we find Bashel Mivushal. So there was another Isser, very creative, classic Reish Lakish, another completely different place where Bishul per se asked or something. We had Rebbe, who learned it out from Lotochlenu by Psulei Hamugdashim, and we learned it out from, incredibly, from homosexuality, that both of them are called Kodesh or Kodesh. Then we had Rav Ashi, who learned it out from the Lo Tochal Kol To'eva, and Koma Kom Shinema, Lo Tochal, it's an Isser Hana'ah, which he actually learns out from the Vela Gufa, no connection to the way that Rebbe was learning it from the Vela, but just the fact that the Torah had to be Matir Achilles, the Vela, and that would only be according to Rebbe Meir, not according to Rebbe Yehuda. Those were the different ways that we learned the sugya, and now we're ready to move on to the next piece of the Mishnah, which was the Machlokas with Rebbe Akiva about Chaya V'Of, and according to him, actually, Rebbe Akiva says Chaya V'Of are not really Osir, and he learned that from the fact that it says Lo Tzivashu Gidi, and it says Gidi three times, and that, remember, was a miut, so it's a miut of chay, a miut of of, and a miut of emet mea. That was Rabbi Akiva's drosha. Now, the problem is, of course, that now that we've gone through the sugya, we realize that, wait a minute, the gedi that you're talking about, Rabbi Akiva, was critical for Shmuel's gedi. Remember when Shmuel went wild over the gedis? I think it was going to be one of Naftali's upcoming songs. He's got a Gedi, 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 and all of these different things of Gedi, and the different ways that Shmuel ended up using Gedi. So we pared it down from his six Gedis back down to three Gedis. But anyway, we had a lot of Gedis, and he needed a Gedi to include Nevela and Chelev and Shlil and Behema, Tamea to be excluded, and those were the Gedis. So how does Rabbi Akiva have all of these Gedis available to also tell me, no, not Of and not Chaya? Well, I'll tell you why. Rabbi Akiva says, and this was another one of Rashi's reasons for not liking the way that we had originally understood Shmuel before, we were trying to say that he holds that Isser Chalal Isser. You see from here that he definitely does not hold Isser Chalal Isser. It wasn't from the Pasuk with Gufe. It was rather learned Gufa from the Pasuk of Gedi. And that's because Rashi explains that the very word Gedi is unnecessary. Why are we focusing on a particular animal instead of just saying Basar? So because of that, Rashi says he actually had three Psukim, and one of them was coming to tell me that Dafka, in this case, we would say, Isser Chalal Isser. One of his proofs is from this Gemara. Because since we're going to explain that Rabbi Akiva, in holding Yisr Chalal Yisr, obviates the need for the pasuk that Shmuel needed to tell me Yisr Chalal Yisr, that leaves us one additional gedi free. You see? Perfect. So that it really becomes more and more clear as we go along that Rashi's approach was correct. Okay, so first of all, I say, you don't need a pasuk to tell me that chelev b'chalav is aser, or that nevela b'chalav is aser, because I hold in general iser chalal iser. So that gives me one extra gedi. Okay, you needed a gedi to tell me that a fetus is included. Well, why the heck wouldn't it be included? That's ridiculous, says Rabbi Akiva. A fetus is a gedi. I don't understand. What right do you have to say that it's not? So I don't need it for that, because a shulil is a gedi, and therefore I don't need chelev, I don't need mesa, I don't need shulil, and now I've got my three gedis free for me to say. One comes to tell me excluding chaya, one comes to tell me excluding birds, and one comes to tell me excluding a behema tamiya. That's the basis of my lima. Now, the Mishnah concludes with Rabbi Yossi Aglili. The Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, sounds like the same. It says, lo tochlu kol nevela. So therefore, the Torah is being makish nevela to basar b'chalav. Whatever is an isser of nevela is an isser of basar b'chalav, and only those things is an isser of basar b'chalav. So you might think that that means that if there's a oaf, since an oaf is also b'chalav, it's included, and therefore we needed to have the b'chalav imo, that since an oaf doesn't have a mommy, it's not included. Okay, so doesn't that mean that Rabbi Yossi Aglili agrees with Rabbi Akiva? I mean, they both say, yeah, for different reasons, but they both say that birds and deer or any other chaya is not included. It's just one of them is learning it from B'chalev Imo, and Rabbi Akiva is learning it from the Gedi. No, there's a big difference. Because Rabbi Yossi Aglili obviously holds that since anything that's an Isser Nevela would be included, so then that would mean that it would include the Basar Chaya as a Diraisa, whereas Rabbi Akiva was the one who says Basar Chaya is only Dirabana. Okay, that's one possibility. Now, there's another possibility. Difference would be chicken. Rabbi Akiva only said Chaya v'ov einan min haTorah, but he agrees that there is a Dirabanan. So Hamid Rabbanan Asiri, you're not allowed to have chicken with milk. But where did Rabbi Yossi Aglili ever say anything about not eating chicken with milk? Apparently, according to him, it's not only that it's not Aser Midiraisa, he just brings the pasuk and says it's obviously not included because it says Bechalev Imo. And the very important issue is, if the Torah specifically goes out of its way to say something is mutter, the Rabbanan don't answer it. So according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, alone, I agree that the sun is very delicious. So if the Torah specifically said that it's kosher, the Rabbanan would not have gone out to aser it. That would mean that according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, there is no iser of eating chicken with milk. And indeed, they used to eat chicken together with milk freely, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And Tanya Nami Achi, we've got a braita that says, b'mekomo shel Rabbi Eliezer, just giving you examples of non-normative halacha in which we know that there is a shita, and we thought that we could conveniently ignore that shita, but it turns out that wherever there were places where they paskened like that, that's what they used to do. In Rebbe Eliezer, remember, Rebbe Eliezer held that a hechsher mitzvah is doiches haShabbos. Now, you generally need to have a knife in order to perform a milah. If milah is doiches haShabbos, If the mitzvah itself is Docha Shabbos, then the hechsher for that mitzvah, according to him, is also Docha Shabbos. So if you don't have a knife for doing the milah, you have to make a knife. But in order to make a knife, you need fuel. And in order to make fuel, you have to cut down trees. But you can't just burn wood in order to make steel. You're going to have to first make it into charcoal so you can get some real heat. Anyway, every last thing, you cut down the tree, you make the charcoal, and then you make the metal, and then you make the, my God, the guy's spending the whole day of Shabbos being Mechalel Shabbos to make a knife for Mila. That's correct. According to Rebbe Eliezer, they actually used to do that. And now you kortim etzim, lasot pechamim, lasot barzel, and that was their actual minhag lahalacha. And in Rebbe Yossi Aglieli's city, they used to eat chicken with milkshakes, and you could go into your local kosher lemahadrin diner and have yourself some broiled chicken with milk. Delicious. Anyway, that is the way halacha works. And Levi once came to the house of Yosef Rishba. Rishba means a trapper. So this guy used to trap all types of exotic birds. And they serve Levi a delicious boiled in milk peacock, the head of a peacock, actually beautiful. And he didn't say anything to them. I didn't eat it, obviously, but he didn't say anything to them. And he comes to Rebbe and he tells Rebbe what happened. And Rebbe said, what? You should have put them all into cherem. How did you let them get away with it? Amaylo teshamtinu. So Levi said to him, what do you mean? This is not my city. This is the city where the Pesach of the city is Reb Yehuda ben Batira. Do I know what he told them? Maybe he taught them a Libra to Reb Yossi Aglieli. And according to Reb Yossi Aglieli, it's a Beferish Pesach. Yotza Ov She'en Lo Chalev Eim. And it's Dafka Mutter. So what am I going to tell him, that it's Usser? Amazing. So since it's story time, I'll tell you a story. So this is classic, because nowadays people believe that there is one way, and there's only one way in the halacha. So therefore, you have to put them into cherem if they don't do it your way, right? Okay, so in Baltimore, there was a Rav who was a big Talmud Chacham, and he paskened for his tzibur that they can use a microphone on Shabbos. Now, that was like a big deal in those early days when they had just developed microphones. It was like, whoa, that's a big issue. That's using electricity on Shabbos. And anybody who does that is Mechalel Shabbos. And he paskin, there's no issue in using a microphone. Fine. So they had a chazan in that shul. And then at one point, there was another shul in town, which was now already, they had discovered Frumkeit, because that's what happened in 1956. So this is already 1957. Now already there's a monolithic halacha. So that shul was looking for a chazan. This guy, who was the chazan for years in the microphone shul, applies for the job. So the shul decides they can't use him because he's a chazan, it's Mechalel Shabbos. And after all, it was Rav Moshe Feinstein who paskened that you can't use a microphone on Shabbos, so they refused to hire him. So this guy, this chazan, comes to ask my father, Zatzal, you know, like what he should do. So my father tried arguing with them and telling them, listen, he worked for Rav Polyakov, and Rav Polyakov paskened that the microphone is okay. So what are you putting him into cherem for? Because he paskened like Rav Polyakov. Yes, but Rav Moshe is the Pesach Gador. You can't argue with Moshe. So my father calls up Rav Moshe, tells him the story. Rav Moshe is horrified. What, are you crazy? I was only paskening for whoever listens to my psak. Of course he's perfectly okay. It's like exactly the case over here in the Gemara. And this brings us to a moment with our very own Capitan. We are about to move on from Basar v'Cholav into the next exciting sugya, of cheese making. And now we've got Alon's attention because he's fascinated by the thought of making his own cheeses. So we need to think a little bit about how to make cheese. In order to make cheese, we need a catalyst that's going to cause the protein in the milk to stick to each other and to essentially pull the milk solids out of the whey, which the whole thing was originally one liquid, and it turns into cheese with just a little bit of catalyst, because that's how catalysts work, as you know. And what is the perfect catalyst for making cheese? Well, you know what they say. The way that someone discovered how to make cheese is he went for a walk and was going through the desert and had put a bunch of milk into his leather water bag, which it turned out had been made out of the stomach of an animal. So he filled it with milk, and when he came to drink and opened it, he discovered some delicious cheddar cheese with a label on it that said "use before" and so on. And that was an amazing miracle. And because of that, people started making cheese by putting things in stomachs of animals. All right, but Lamaisa, it's not the stomach that's important. It's one of the excretions of a stomach, and it is an excretion that is used for digesting milk, and therefore it works very well as a catalyst for actually causing the protein in the milk to clump. Now, the thing is that this type of activity of the stomach is triggered by the presence of milk in the stomach. And therefore, if you have a nursing animal that is needs to actually properly use its stomach to digest milk, then this stomach is going to be filled with this catalyst. Now, what happens is there's three ways in which you can do this. You can take the actual stomach itself, which includes the ore of the keva, so that's the stomach itself, the actual skin of the keva, as it's called in the Gemara, or you could use the milk that is in the stomach that is now filled with this catalyst and use that, or you could use the actual stomach contents, which are now basically no longer considered to be food because they're digested food and therefore they have the same din as pirsha bi'alma. They don't have a din of food, but they're filled with the correct chemicals to create cheese. That is called, as you know, rennet. And that rennet is therefore something that comes from either the whole stomach, and in which case, if you're going to actually use the stomach, then you get into the problem of basar b'cholav, because the stomach itself is basar. Not only that, you will get into the problem of whether it's kosher, because if it's not a kosher animal's stomach, then it's putting the taste of a non-kosher meat into your cheese. Then the other way of doing it is to use fresh milk from a nursing animal, and that fresh milk that is found in the stomach is filled with the catalysts necessary, and that is called keva. It's called stomach, but it isn't. The word keva actually means rennet, unless you redefine it as or hakeva. So it's called keva because it's stomach lining, so to speak. Or you could use the milk that has been totally digested, but it's still in that stomach, and the stomach is filled with these chemicals that were used to digest it. And there's differences in all of these cases. If you use the actual stomach, then you're getting into a problem of the meat of the stomach and the mixture. If you're using the fresh milk, then you only need to know where the fresh milk came from. if it came from a non-kosher animal and this particular young animal was nursing from a horse, then if it's fresh milk, it's going to be usser. If you're using decayed, already digested milk, then it doesn't matter if the milk was coming from a horse, because it isn't milk. It is simply stomach contents that is, for all intents and purposes, pirsha bi'alma. So it's just actual, the same defecation. It doesn't matter whether it's in the stomach or it's on the ground in a cow patty. It's all the same thing. So now, the issue that we need to discuss, says the Mishnah, are the problems in cheese making. And this was a big issue in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which is important for us to access over here, because we need to remember that there was a time in which the thought was that the reason that it's usser to use Goyesha cheese is because, as Rabbi Yoshua said, well, they use dead animals for making cheese. It's an avela. That was the original. The truth is that Rabbi Yoshua was trying to keep people away from examining, as the Gemara ends up saying over there, we didn't want people worrying about the basis of the takana, because the basis of the takana was really part of the richuk from Akum. And if you tell people that, they wouldn't keep it. Well, anyway, I'm going to end up marrying into a Goyesha family just because of a cheese and wine tasting. Come on, a little bit of kosher grape wine. All right, so it was made by a Goy, and a little bit of yummy cheese is not going to bring us to marry, will it? Anyway, so they were hiding what the real issue was. So initially, Rabbi Yeshua said the problem is that they use nevelas. Then it turned out that he couldn't keep up that pretense, because they asked on him from the dinim of eating the rennet from a korban ola, and that is kosher, it says beferish, so he couldn't keep that up. So anyway, it turned out that it's because it's avodah zarah. What's the avodah zarah? Because if you're bringing an animal to the church, then you're very happy for it to look big and fat. And therefore, whatever it's filled with, even if it's complete garbage and it's totally digested, you're still happy with nifiche. Nifiche means the extra volume. And because of that, the rennet actually became takrovet lavodah zarah. So you'll say, but for heaven's sakes, it's only the tiniest bit of a rennet that is going to be put in. It's bottle in an elef. Ah, but you forget. There's a special din in dinim of tarovet, which is called catalysts are usser even in a million parts. And that's because a catalyst, the impact of the catalyst is always recognizable. So let's say you have what is called a mamid. You have an emulsifier. The emulsifier is a catalyst. Yes. But you see the impact of the emulsifier very, very clearly. My yogurt isn't liquidy. It's all sitting there like a gel. Well, you can't say the emulsifier wasn't kosher, but it's bottle. I can see the impact of it, right? And that's true of all catalysts, including chemuts. If you cause something to actually ferment, it's a different type of catalyst. And therefore, if it really were rennet of avodah zarah, and it would be also because of takrovet avodah zarah, then that would be a good reason for you not to eat that cheese. Okay, so that's in the end how Rabbi Yoshua came out. But meanwhile, we need to discuss kosher cheese making, because we're talking about Alon's new cheese offerings. And therefore, we have to start and think what type of rennet would be okay. So, kevat oveit kochavim. So we got this curious Mishnah. Here it says, a rennet that you take from a goy, which, I mean, if the goy shechted the animal, obviously shechted, he shot the animal, so it's an avela. But then it mentions separately, or shel nevela, which doesn't make any sense, because that's the same thing, isn't it? So tomorrow we'll discuss this. So if you're using keva, and remember, keva is the word for rennet, unless it's the word for stomach. And that depends on the context, like we spoke about before, the Or HaKeva and so on. But what about, so these both of these cases are Osir. How about if you use the Or of the Keva, this is the fourth stomach that we're talking about, the Or of the Keva was used, then you run into another problem, even if it's kosher, because it's meat. And imiyesh bo benotein tam, if you have a shishim in this case, and remember, you'll say, yeah, but it's cold. But it stays there for more than 24 hours, doesn't it? And remember that that has a din of kovush. And we said before, kovush is mivushal. And therefore, it means that it will get the taste of the meat. There are many shitas, by the way, that taina, that catalysts are just as bad as kovush. Okay, that's a side point to that. You wouldn't even need 24 hours. But lamaisa, we do use 24 hours in cases of real cheese. And therefore, if it was tasting like it had any meat in it, it would be usher because of usher b'chalav. And that would be the only issue. Fine. So because of this, if it was an aveilah, or if it was treifa, we would have a problem of a catalyst, because it would be a ma'amid. And that's another Gavi rule. Ma'amid eino batal. But of course, ma'amid is just a word for an example of catalysts. So in that case, here it would be aser, even if the ma'amid is kosher, but the problem is it's meat. So we've got three situations here. Avodah Zarah, and I explained to you why in the end Avodah Zarah turns out to be unique, because the person is actually happy with it being usher if he's bringing it to the church, because it makes the animal look fatter. Then we have Nevela, where it actually would need to be the shear in order to usher it. And then we have the problem of what if the milk itself isn't kosher? So suppose you have a kosher animal and it has been suckling from a treifa animal, then that would mean that the keva should be usher, you would think, right? Because after all, it's filled with treifa milk. And because of that, that means that the rennet is actually treif. But if it's a digested rennet and it's not fresh rennet, then it wouldn't matter even if it came from a treifa, because it wouldn't have a din of milk anymore. It wouldn't have a din of food. It would just be perish bi'alma. Now Rashi goes through hell here, at least according to what is quoted by the Rivam from Rashi, in thinking that he made a mistake and that this proves that actually it's not considered to be perish bi'alma. In the end, we don't worry about this because, as I explained, we have three separate situations. One of or, one of fresh milk mixed with the rennet, and one of digested milk fixed with the rennet. And therefore, there will be three separate halachas that apply to each relevant case. In the case of the treifa animal that has been nursing from a kosher animal, there, the rennet is kosher because the rennet is made essentially from what came into the stomach, which is indeed mixed with the excretions from the treifa, but those excretions are not themselves considered to be part of the animal. And therefore, the keva, which now consists of the kosher milk, which is fresh, is mutter, because it's only kanus b'me'eha. It has not become part of the other animal. It is being held in the stomach of the treifa animal, but it itself is kosher, and the fact that it's held in the stomach is irrelevant. Okay. Ask the Gemara. You started off with two different elements, the keva that you get from an Oved Kerchovim and an Avela. Last I heard, the keva of an Oved Kerchovim is an avela. So why are these two things? Otu keva Oved Kerchovim lav nevelai. This is an avela. Amravuna, we're talking about over here, the keva who bought it You bought it, the Gedi, from the Akum, but you shechted it. And so what's the problem then? It's just the Jewish cheese. Ah, because the reason that you can't use the rennet is because if you just bought it and shechted it, we're afraid that maybe it was suckling from an animal that was trefa on the farm of the guy. What? We're not worried about stuff like that. The Braita says, Vatanya should say, Lokin beit simin ovikachov, which is we had before. You're allowed to buy eggs from a guy, and you're not worried about there being eggs that were taken out of a bird that had died and was about to lay, and it's nevela. You don't have to be choshesh that maybe it came from a trefa. That became trefa if you hold trefa and you let it. It became trefa after the egg was already formed. We're not worried about it. We go according to the rove. Why in the world would you suddenly worry about suckling from a trefa animal? True. Okay. We're worried maybe it was suckling from a horse that was on the farm. Well, I don't understand. If we're not worried about a trefa, why are we worried about a horse? So imagine a tmeya that we would worry about. Look, that's obvious. I mean, how often do you have an animal that's a trefa? But a regular farmyard, it's got horses, and therefore we'd have to be cautious for the tamea. Then I don't understand. If a regular farmyard has horses, then what's the difference if you bought it from a Jewish farmer? I mean, he's got horses too, doesn't he? I mean, what do you think? He jumped ahead and pulled in some tractors instead. I mean, he's got the same horses that the guy has. So why don't you worry about our own Jewish farmer? Why aren't we afraid that the Gedi on his farm was being yonik from a horse? No, because we basically separate our kosher animals and our non-kosher animals. Anan badlinan minayu. We stay away from the non-kosher animals if we see any of our animals, kikazinan lohu, we see any of our animals nursing from a non-kosher animal, we separate them. We never put them together. So there, lo gazrubu rabanan. But inu de lo badili minayu, mashenkin, the ovde kachobim couldn't care less about whether it's nursing from a horse. Vichichazulu lo lama mafrish lohu. They never are mafrish. And why take it away? Let it enjoy the milk. So over there, gazrubu rabanan. There they did make a gezera against the rennet. Story time again. Now at least I get a little bit of attention. I should have realized that was the trick all along. What I need is a little lead in music for story time, Naftali. If you could just give me a 3-second kind of intro. And then
the only thing in my mind is Mary had a little lamb, a little lamb, a little lamb.
Anyway, so the story time is actually a wartime story in which my poor father-in-law, Zatzal, was in a very difficult situation of starvation. And anyway, so he and his chavrusa were trying to get some milk, and they went to a farm, and the guy was, well, they would trade cigarettes, which were given out to workers. They would trade the cigarettes for actual things that they needed. So they were trading cigarettes for milk. So the farm hand takes them into the farm, and he sees them mixing milk from a horse. They're milking a horse, a mare, together with the milk that they are getting from the cows. And it was at that point that he became a very firm believer in Chol of Yisrael. He never had any milk that wasn't Chol of Yisrael from that day on. I can tell you there were difficult times, because Chol of Yisrael, once upon a time, was very difficult to get. You had to actually go out to the farm, get it yourself. The kids would never drink it because it tasted like milk. And of course, commercial milk doesn't taste anything like milk. So you can't get kids to drink it. But end of story time. Shmuel Amar. So Shmuel's got another reason why the Mishnah would have mentioned separately the Ovid Kirchhoff. I mean, he says, no, it's not talking about you buying the actual animal. It's talking about the Shechita Ovid Kochavim, and it is an Avela, and that's exactly what the Mishnah means. Kevat Oved Kochavim, meaning the Kevat Shchitat Oved Kochavim, which is Nevela. That's what the Mishnah was saying. But I thought Shmuel doesn't hold to that. Umiyona Shmuel Hachi. Did Shmuel say that because the animal is a Nevela, so therefore the rennet is treif? Didn't Shmuel say, Mipnei ma asru gvinata of de kochavim, mipnei shemamidim ota bo or kevat nevela. Shmuel had originally said, now, as I mentioned to you earlier, this was actually what Rabbi Yoshua's original thought was over here. And Shmuel tainted that the problem is they would use the actual skin of the stomach, and then that would create an issue of nevela, because it was a dead animal skin. And it's not the skin of the body, it's the skin of the keva, which is edible. So isn't that mashma that the only reason that you can't eat the goyisha cheese is because they use the actual stomach? But hakeva gufa sharia. If you would just use rennet, there is no problem. And now you're telling me that Shmuel is explaining the Mishnah that the rennet in the keva is nevela because the animal's nevela. But that runs against what Shmuel himself said. Ah, you're right. You're absolutely right. But you're forgetting that there were two stages in the way we understood the Isser of cheeses. As I told you before, Rabbi Yoshua was originally asked in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, why did the Chachamim Aser cheese of a goy? And he first answered it by saying, well, it's because the keva is of a nevela, and it's considered to be part of the animal, and therefore it's Aser. Afterwards, as I explained to you, that we brought a raya in the Gemara to Rabbi Yeshua, how can you say that keva is usur if the halacha is that the keva of an oila is allowed to be eaten by a kohen, even though it has a din of, it's part of the actual animal. So you see from there that it's not part of the actual animal. And then Rabbi Yeshua had to admit that he was wrong, and he said that really the keva of an avela is perfectly kosher, and that's why he changed it to say it's because of avodas kerkovim. We're over there, it's the nificha that's the problem. Fine. But initially, the Mishnah, remember we have a gavi klal that says, Mishnah lo zaza mimkoma. We don't move Mishnayas and delete them after they've already been taught. And we don't change the girsa in them because it creates tremendous confusion. It's much easier for people to say, but doesn't it say in the Mishnah? And we answer them, yes, that was the Mishnah Rishona. This is the Mishnah Achrona. So the truth is our Mishnah is going according to the original Mishnah in the discussion between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yishmael in Avodah Zarah. And that Mishnah is expressed here, in which the Nevela actually would make the Rennet Aser. Masha'in came when Shmuel was explaining that it's because of the Or. That was after Rabbi Yeshua at Charata. And he said, no, there's no problem with the Nevela. So over there, basically, Shmuel wanted to explain that the issue is the skin itself and not the keva, not the rennet. Okay. Now, the next piece of the Mishnah says that if, I realize it's getting so late. Our cheese making is taking a long time. All right, we'll just get to the Mishnah, okay? I hope. So the question over here is, Kesherish Yankamen HaTrefa, the rennet is, we said, Aser. If it was Yanka Trefa, was Yanka Menakshera, then it's kosher because it's considered to be Konus Bemea. There's a contradiction here in the Mishnah itself. The Reisha said, Kevat Oved Kochavim V'shal Nevela is Asura. So then that means that if it's to be found in the Keva, it's considered to be part of the animal and it's an avela. So why isn't the keva in the seifa, which is found in a trefa animal, why isn't that a trefa? You're right. In the end, of course, we're going to end up understanding that one is before chazar and one is after. But first, we attempt to answer it by logic. So, Omer of Chista, the reason is that the renet is not considered to be part, and it's a gezeira in the reisha. The chachamim answered it because it looks like you're eating nevelas. Masha Inken, if you're talking about a trefa, which is shruta, it doesn't look so bad because there's a shchita. Says Rava, just the opposite. There's even more of a reason to make it usher. V'lav kol shekenu, if a nevela, which people don't eat nevela, they're disgusted by nevela, it's mos. And if you're going to be matir, the rennet of a nevela, nobody's going to eat the meat of the nevela. That's nauseating. And nonetheless, you said that there's a gzeir drabana not to eat it. So a tray for shchuta, where people do not feel that this is disgusting, if you're going to be matir the rennet, they'll think that it's kosher, and they may eat the meat, so it's even more of a reason to aser the rennet, lo kosher kein. Ela, Omer, Rav Yitzchak, Omer, Rav Yochanan, there's no kasha. Kan kodem chazara, and kan li acher chazara. As we said, the first part of the Mishnah was when we thought that Rav Yeshua was right, and that there's an iser nevela on rennet. He absolutely was proven wrong by the din of the rennet from an eila, and Mishnah lo zozo mimekoma. And if you want to hear the halacha, Omer of Chiya Barav, Omer of Yochanan, you can use the rennet that you find in a nevela, but you cannot use rennet that you find in the shechita of a goy. Because the shechita of a goy might have been given to Avodah Zarah, and then it's, as I said before, nechalei benefiche. He's happy with the additional volume that the animal looks fatter. So Rabbi Shimon bar Abba asked Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, do you mean to paskin here like Rabbi Eliezer, who we learned before, says, stam machshevet oved kochavim la'avodat kochavim? Remember, we had that before. Earlier in the Masechet, about whether a shechita of Avodah Kochavim is osur because it's going to be assumed to be for Avodah Zarah, Alib de Reb Eliezer, Omar Lei, said Reb Chiya bar Abba, and who else? Of course, that's what I'm going according to. Ella Keman. Now, when Reb Shmuel bar Yitzchak was Yoreid from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he quotes Reb Yochanan as saying, it makes absolutely no difference. You can use the keva of a nevela. You can use the keva of a shechita of a goy. Nobody worries about the shechita of Rebbe Eliezer, that stamach sheves akum is lavadis kechovim nowadays. And the halacha lamaisa is you cannot use the actual skin. Well, yes, because that's the meat. So if you're using the skin of a nevela, no good. But you could certainly use the rennet itself. And you can even use the rennet of Shritas Avedis Kerchavim. And that's the end. The rest makes no sense. And we'll see you Bezrat Hashem if we are given, as good old Mr. Bornstein would say, if the good Lord spares us, Bezrat Hashem, we will continue tomorrow. Excellent. See you Bezrat Hashem. Kol Tov, everyone.